You're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show, making the world a better place, one show at a time. You're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show, making this world a better place one show at a time. At least we're trying.
This is Chicago's finest internet radio show, making a world a better place one show at a time. The George Wilder Jr. Show is now on the air. Take it away, Dad.
All right, welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show, broadcasting live from Chicago. It is a great day. Thanks for tuning in, folks. Thanks for listening. Thanks for downloading and podcasting the show at any time during your own convenience. It's always a pleasure. And welcome to the show. We're going to have a great time today. I'm here in Chicago, as always, broadcasting live from Chicago at this point in time. But however, when you're downloading the show, you know, you're podcasting, it might be, it's not going to be live, but anytime and any way you listen to the show, it's always appreciated. And it's very nice in Chicago. It's a great day. It's a wonderful day. It's a sunny day. It's rained this morning, but it turned out to be a pretty great day. It's 85 degrees in Chicago. I'm pretty sure it's a little less closer to the lake, because I'm closer to the lake and I love living by the lake. I love being by the lake. So it's something about water, lots of water, that does something to me. All right. You can always look. You can always look me up on Facebook, LinkedIn. I'm on Amazon. I'm all over the place. Google, Twitter, wherever you can find me. That's where you can find me. And, you know, it's fun. It's done. This is my anniversary. August is my second anniversary for the show. And I love it. I love it. You know, even though it's an expense for me, but I love doing what I'm doing. So I don't mind really the overhead, because it's worth it. It's worth it. And this show, folks, it's all about making the world a better place. That's all it's about. There's nothing else to it but making the world a better place. And we're going to try to do our best. Thank you. And some things, you know what, if you think about the Olympics, they're saying that the women are outdoing the men in the medal count. You know, they're winning more medals in Rio as the games are actually in progress as I speak than the men. That's, you know, that's no argument. I know that. The women are more, I'm not going to say that the women are more superior. I'm just saying the men are probably just lacking behind. But, you know, it's America. It's America. Whether it's the men winning the most medals or the women winning the most medals, it's America winning the most medals. That's the way I look at it. I don't look at it as a competition between American women and American men. Hey, they are the most talented, because they collectively have the most medals. I think China is in second place, but they're way behind in second place. Okay, I don't have the statistics with me, but the games go on. The games go on. You're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. Let's go to the phone. Somebody is on the phone. All right, you're on the George Wilder Jr. Show.
Yeah, this is John Wayne.
You know what? I have you on my screen, and it's John Wayne. I said, what? Has he risen from the grave to be on my show? I said, I can't mention his name. I don't know. So are you actually named after the actor or just something that happened?
No, I come from a long line of John Wayne's. I'm the third.
Okay.
So,
okay.
And then, you know, John Wayne's name wasn't really John Wayne.
I know.
Miriam.
It was his stage name. I know. But still,
you know.
Michael Morrison or something so to that effect.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm a John Wayne fan. I got a lot of his movies, old movies. I'm a total fan, regardless of his politics. I'm a total fan. So when I booked you, I said, wow, John Wayne. And I'm looking at my screen. John Wayne is, you know, I'm saying, wow. Because I usually introduce people before they come onto the show. And I said, I'm going to hold off on this one. So welcome to the show, Mr. John Wayne.
Well, thank
all
you.
All right.
Thank you for having me.
All right. No problem. Give us a little bio and a little tell us about yourself and what you do.
I am a film and television producer. I've been producing media for the past 23 years. Commercials, videos, films.
Well, at least you're in the same industry as he was, you know, so go right ahead.
Yeah, I currently live in Houston, but I'm originally from the south side of Chicago. I've been in Houston about 12 years.
Oh, okay. All right. And what do you, what would you like for my audience to know about what you do and how they can benefit from what you do?
Well, I have a film that I produce called Red All Over. It's about a young boy who accidentally shoots a girl. It talks about gun violence, bullying, mental health, and a variety of things that keeps popping up in the media. And I want people to know about the film and to have just the film is really a way to really start the discussion on gun violence and people's feelings about the Second Amendment rights and how they feel like how mental health goes and deals with that and how that deals in their daily life. I get a lot of interviews where I go on shows with people who are pro-gun and anti-gun. So, I mean, I get a variety of different opinions when it comes to gun rights.
Yeah. And being a gun owner myself, I think that it's a God-given right to own a weapon or something. But you know what? I'm not going to do like most people go out and just start shooting up the place, you know, because a lot of people who are gun owners, you know, it's a slippery slope because I think that most of the gun violence out here is probably not caused by those who have guns illegally. It may be caused by those who have guns legally because anybody, you know, it's because most people can and lose their temper at a certain point. They may feel that they're not being respected or not this or that. And they're, you know, it's this concealed and carry thing. And, you know, all of a sudden a bullet starts flying and innocent people are killed. And what are your thoughts?
Well, what I try to do, what we try to do in the film was not to take one side over the other. The film is a really good balance of the shooter and the victims. Usually when someone gets shot and they get on news, the pundits make a big issue about the person who shot them, depending on what the situation is. And usually they turn out to be a victim. But we really try to get people to see both sides of the story. You know, before you choose, I understand both. So we really try to sell both sides. This is a 17-year-old boy, and we try to delve into the reason why he even had a gun, why he felt like he needed to shoot anybody. You know, and a lot of times we turn people to the point to where we just hate them because they've done these shootings. Like this movie was kind of loosely based, dedicated to Adia Pendleton, the young girl who went to Obama's inauguration and she came back.
Oh yeah, I remember.
She got shot. Okay, so when they eventually caught up with the guys who had shot her, they said that the guys were on their way to the strip club. Now, automatically, people are like, oh, my God, these are just, you know, vile of the earth. They're just, they need to go to jail, be underneath the jail. But the thing about it is that in their particular case, you know, you really don't know if that coping mechanism. I'm not saying what they did was right or wrong, but you really need to dig a little deeper into the characters in the story. The character in our film is a 17-year-old boy named Raymond Wright. His father's is an alcoholic. His mother's a recovering addict. They can't really spend any time with him. He can't get any attention that he needs at school. The guys at school bully him. So he has all these things that's happening to him. He has all these things he needs to overcome as a young person. And he does not have the tools to help him deal with that. The other hand is a young girl there who does good in school. She's one of his friends. And she tries to stick up for him every now and then, you know, when people are saying and doing things to her. But she is from a single parent. Her father is a single parent. And her father's telling her, don't go to the park because anything can happen. And she's like most people, like, oh, yeah, it's the park. Yeah. Nothing's going to happen there. Yeah. You know, so it's a story of things that happen, you know, one way or the other. And I really, really tried to tell both of those sides.
You know what, listening to you a moment ago, it sounds like that your movie could be a documentary, and it could be a documentary about what's actually going on. It could be a true story to that effect. It could be, because what you just described is probably happening all over the place. You know, you just documented into a film. And gun violence in Illinois, America is just too out of control. And how would you do you think of maybe making a film one day, trying to advocate ending gun violence in America in some way?
Well, I'm going to say this about gun violence and just guns in general. When I was growing up, the people who had guns, we didn't have a gun in our house. The people who had guns were the police and bad people. So the first time I ever saw a gun was on a movie set. Although it was capped, that was the first time I ever really saw a gun. When I talk to people about having a gun, a lot of people say, well, this is my right to have a gun, which I do believe it's everybody's right to have a gun and to protect their family and themselves.
Yeah.
Other people feel like people need more training. If they have more training, it'll make it better. But I always put it to people this way. If me and you are having a disagreement and it gets really heated, and now I can feel like I can kind of talk my way out of the situation, but you may feel threatened. Your life is threatened. You feel threatened for the situation. You're going to use whatever is available to you to protect yourself. You can't teach threat level. You can't teach anything to keep somebody not feeling threatened for their life. You know, people could they look at the most sane person in the world, but once they get to feel like they're threatened, they're going to use whatever things that means to protect themselves.
Yeah, they're going to go right home and get that gun.
Gun, knife, brick, book, whatever. They're going to use whatever that's disposable. Guns are very easily available. So people easily, they have a gun, they're going to do something with it. I think that there is I don't think there's necessarily one blatant solution to solve the gun violence thing, because there's so many sides to it. There's so many circumstances. But I do think that if people would not get so focused on their point of view and really try to sit down and talk about and listen to the other person's point of view, maybe we can find something that will make sense for everybody. Because everybody, most people, if they own guns or not, want to have some type of common sense gun laws. They want to have things that make sense. And in the media now, people are really talking about, oh, we need to do the background checks and everything. But a lot of times, people who commit crimes with guns can pass background checks. They don't have any issues. So although you could probably keep some people who have some issues down, but if somebody just snaps, the human brain is a balance of liquid. It has a very perfect balance to keep us insane. If it's off just a little bit, it can tip us one way or the other. So there's really no way of really detecting if somebody has an emotional episode at any given time. You know? So
yeah, but
no,
you know
what? Block 100%. Go ahead.
But nowadays, with all 50 states, with all 50 states with a law saying that you can carry a gun, you know, a lot of people are carrying guns. A lot of people are. Yeah. A lot of good people are carrying guns, not criminals, but a lot of people are carrying guns. And they're carrying guns because they're afraid of the violence. They're carrying guns to defend themselves in case violence come among them. But you also have the criminals carrying guns also. But you have so many good people. Every day that I'm out here, and I think me coming in back, you don't know who has a gun. You don't know what they have on them to try to protect them. But they're not going to bother you. They're just out there because the crime in the city of Chicago, it has increased. When people are afraid, you can't even go to the park without being assaulted. You can't walk to the store without being shot. You can't even sit on your front porch without somebody driving up and shoot. You can't even sit in your own apartment or your home without a bullet coming through the window and killing someone, sitting at the table eating breakfast or something. I mean, that's the kind of thing we have in city of Chicago. So gun violence in the city of Chicago is really, really, really at its peak. And they're saying that criminals are getting out of jail too soon, and they're going back doing some of the same things they were doing before they went to jail. I don't know if that all of that is the problem, but I do know we have to find a solution because not just in Chicago but across America, criminals are more blatant than ever when it comes to gun violence.
But see, you know, the thing about, you just made a statement about people are in fear. So they want to find a way to protect themselves. What is probably, in my opinion, what's worse than a criminal going around shooting people is a person who's scared who has a gun. They're afraid. And so anything that might push them one way or the other, they're taking the gun out. And when people are in fear, they usually not always make the best decisions. So even if they're protecting themselves, they take the gun out, somebody's trying to do something to them, they might accidentally shoot somebody else. So if everybody had a gun, you know, we all don't need to have a gun to be shooting each other. I mean, that would just...
No, we don't. We don't, but people are... Yeah, we don't. We don't, but they're out there. People are carrying... They're carrying something. Yeah. It could be mace or something. They're carrying something to try to protect themselves. Yeah. And in some cases, you can't blame them, you know, because especially if there is a high crime area, you can't really blame them, man. You'd be kind of crazy to go out, you know, in a high crime area with nothing, you know. And but it's horrible because, you know, people carrying guns. I mean, if you disagree with somebody, if somebody disrespects you, bing, 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 it's over, you know. And it's just crazy. And you know, I don't know. I believe you. I don't think background checks are going to work, and I don't think confiscating guns are going to work because the bad guys are always going to have guns. They're always going to find a way to get a gun. And they have guns as I speak. You know, you can confiscate 5,000 guns in a night, but there's probably 10,000 more out here. And, you know, so we are always in the city of Chicago, myself, we are always trying to find a way to minimize or just eliminate the gun violence in the city of Chicago, because I think in New York and Los Angeles combined, their larger cities than Chicago combined, they have less crime than Chicago. What are they doing that Chicago is not doing? And that's been a burning question for me.
I think a lot of cases, I think it's just the way it's ideology. I don't necessarily think that they're doing anything different. There's something systemic that's happening in Chicago that's perpetuating people to push this. One of the things in our film, at the end of the film, there's an excerpt of Michelle Obama doing the her talk about gun violence. And one of the things she talks about is that about resources. If some of these young kids, some of these young boys at an early age had some resources in the community to get their mind off of being in the street or some mentoring and things of that sort, that's not going to solve everybody. That's not going to get this, you know, make a blanket, you know, make it all go away. But it would deter the thinking, processing information of how they deal with difficulty. gun violence has a lot to do with how people deal with difficulty. How do they deal with when they're stressed? How do they deal with when they're frustrated, when they're upset and they're angry? If we can find ways of getting people to rationalize and think, okay, I'm angry. How do I deal with this? Instead of saying, you know what? You did something I don't like. Now I need to go get my gun and take care of it. Because when you shoot somebody, it's like a really big chance that person might die. You have a very least 50-60% chance that this person might die. So why would you – we need to change the way people think and how they deal with conflict resolution. You know, I think that would be one of the ways
very
of
hard.
How can we deal with that? Yes. Yeah. It's a cultural thing,
that,
you know, so
– Yeah, that
– I don't know.
I mean,
think it starts really young.
Yeah. Yeah. I think if you've grown up, if it starts real young and you've grown up around violence, I think you're going to, you know, it's going to be kind of hard to try to change your mindset, you know, but you know what? It's possible. It's possible. Anything's possible. Have you written a book?
For me, no, I've not written a book. I've contributed to several.
Are you
books,
planning on writing one?
I do have a manuscript that I have been working on for the last year and a half that has nothing to do with gun violence. It's about a guy who's going through divorce and the mentalness he, you know, gets disconnected from, you know, not being able to be there with his family. I traditionally like to go out to stories and go out of different perspectives that people traditionally don't have. The next movie that I'm going to do, it's about a young guy who gets out of jail. He'd been in jail for a crime didn't commit, and his ability to try to assimilate back into society, you know, and the struggle that he has of, you know, in this new world, you know. So I really try to focus on those type of stories.
I don't mean to talk over you, but just like I just got through mentioning, your movies are about real people, real situations.
Yeah.
And that's what makes it awesome. You know, real situations. You just talked about something that could probably going on right now. Somebody's getting out of jail and trying to fit back into society. And a lot of time it doesn't work. That person wind up going back to jail for something similar that he was sent there in the past for, you know.
And I don't think it's so much that they want to go back to jail, but just like you said.
No. I'm not saying they want to go back. They just happen to go back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Somebody's been in the system for 15, 20 years, and that's all they know. In this case, this guy was 16 years old when he got into the system. So although he got out and he was a older man, he was still 16 years old.
This is the upcoming movie.
Out. Yes. Mm-hmm. You know, so a lot of that goes right back to what I said about resources and getting kids at an early age and give them other things that they can focus their mind and attention on. And we just, in our community, we just don't really have a lot of that. You know, there are some, and then some homes don't have a lot of support at home, so you don't really have that reinforcement, you know, so... Mm. I don't know. I think it's a matter for discussion. I think it's something that, we really need to do less talking because we have lots of symposiums and discussions about solving the problem.
I agree. I agree.
Stuff.
Right. We need to come up with some solutions and put some action behind our words. You know, I've said that for a number of years. We just can't sit back and say, wow, that's wrong. That's not right. The kids are growing up. They're shooting each other. The adults have to get involved. We have to be involved. We have to get them at a young age and try to turn them around, turn them away, turn them in a different direction, a positive direction, because a lot of times in some of these high crime communities, there's no parents. The parents are on drugs or the prostituting, and the kids are left, you know, to fend for themselves. Suddenly there's a gang around the corner that's going to accept them, and suddenly somebody in the gang gives this person a give this child a gun, and that's all that's said.
Mm-hmm. This is true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so there has to be a discussion and not only talk, but we have to find solutions to this. And on this show, I've been trying to give solutions to the gun problem. I've been trying to give the solutions to how to bring down crime, but, you know, I'm not a politician, so...
Well, traditionally, politicians, they don't necessarily come up with solutions. Usually politicians, they go to the community and talk with the community and let the community come back with stuff. And politicians just
not these politicians in Chicago.
Yeah,
not these guys.
Chicago is a different set. You know, the funny thing about Chicago,
a different set. Okay.
Being here in Houston for 12 years, when they want to do stuff in Houston and the community doesn't like it, they kind of back off a little bit. They won't do it. It doesn't work that way in Chicago. If they want to do something, they're going to do it. They'll let you protest and complain about it, but at the end of the day, this is what they're doing. And you really don't have too many choice in it. So I think sometimes politicians get it mixed up thinking that when they get into office that they're supposed to do what they think is best. But that's not their representation of the community they're representing.
Exactly.
So they should do what the community wants them to do, even if it's something that they don't want to do. They should have the approach, well, you know what? I think these all should be red over here, but if the community think it should be blue, then that's what I'm going to do because they're the ones who employ you. But somehow they get confused with that, and then the special interest group and, you know, people paying for campaigns, things of sort, that gets all twisted.
Yeah.
And they come back with, well, I know what's best for you. Well, no, you don't. That's not why you
You do not
elected.
Know what's best for me.
That's right. You know, but that always gets very twisted somewhere in there. And then what happens is that we keep voting the same people back in over and over and over again. And
yeah, we vote against we vote against our own interest. Yes.
Yes. Yes. You know, and people seem to, I don't know why we do that. And then we have very short memories. People forget what somebody did last year. And then it's time to vote and they hand out some free turkeys and hams. And they come take some hands, take some pictures. I'm serious. And then they go back and vote.
I know,
like,
I know.
You remember, you had that, you know, so I don't know. The nature of a politician. I mean, that's the nature of a politician to be able to do that.
The governor in Illinois, I mean, when he ran, he gave out the gift certificates, you know. He bought the election, you know. And another reason why he's a Republican, he just vetoed automatic voter registration in the city of Chicago. And another reason why he's in office, a lot of people did not get out and vote. You know, I mean, when you stay home and you don't vote, that's a vote for a Republican. That's a vote for, you know, and I understand a lot of people's anxiety about a politician. They're all liars. They're all crooks. Most of them are. Yeah. But you have to still get out there and vote, because so many people, as you probably heard this before, fought and died and you know, just suffered for us to be able to vote. And
I think a lot of times they don't understand the process. They'll go out and vote for the president, but they won't vote for the down ballot. So they don't do the in-between elections. And then they're confused about why is it that things are happening? Why is it happening this way? Because they don't understand that you have to vote for all the elections, even if it's the dog catcher.
Yeah.
You have to
vote.
Vote for the dog catcher, because if not, when your dog gets lost, he's going to make it hard for you to get your dog back. And you're like, I don't understand. Mm-hmm. As you work for me, he's like, well, you should have voted for the guy who would make it easy for you to get your dog back. But we don't see it that way, and we don't understand that.
No.
So we'll go. Everybody went out and vote for Obama. He got elected 2 times. So it's not like they don't know how to vote. It's not like they're unfamiliar with the process. But then when it comes to the other races, the representatives and all the local politicians, they don't come out and vote for that.
They don't. And that's very, very important. Just as voting for the governor or voting for the president, you got to give them people. You got to give the governor and the president some people to work with. You know, you got to vote.
Right.
You got to give them people to work with. Now, look at Obama and the Republican Congress. He can't work with those people and they won't work with him.
No.
You know, so, you know, if you're going to vote for a Democratic governor, make sure you vote for a Democratic representative and a senator for your state. You know, so you can give your governor something to work with, because we have gridlock right in here in Illinois. You know, so that's because we got a Republican governor and a Democratic legislature, and they just can't stand each other. So the people suffer.
Yeah.
That
we all suffering. Yeah. People don't want to come to a compromise. It's amazing how people can do that.
Yeah. And if I can get back to the crime thing here, I think a lot of the politicians are responsible for lowering crime in the state, in the city. I think they are. I think that's one of the things that they are elected to do, is to protect the citizens of their city and their state. I think that's an obligation for them to do it. And a lot of them don't do it. A lot of them don't care. They leave it to the police department, which some of these guys are just, you know, brutal and corrupt.
Yeah.
And it's just a mess. But
you know what happens a lot of times when it comes to things like that, people don't really take a personal interest in it until it affects them personally. So it's like they look at the news and they get so jaded by every single, if you look at the news in Chicago every day, somebody's on the news got shot somewhere.
You got that right.
You keep saying that over and over and over again, you get jaded. You just kind of like, well, it's okay. People get shot every day. Now, when it becomes your family, that's that person on TV screaming and hollering about their family got shot, murdered, or whatever case may be, then it becomes a personal interest. But before that, people don't really take a personal interest in it until it's something that directly connects to them.
Mm-hmm. All right, author John Wayne. I'm saying author because you are a screenwriter. So author John Wayne and commentary on the George Wilder Jr. Show. Thanks for being on the show, man. And is there anything that you haven't said that you would like to say? And can you give us your website and stuff like that? And let us know about you when you're coming out.
They can find out more about the film at redalloverfilm.com. They can follow us on Facebook at Red All Over Film, Twitter at Red All Over Film. Pretty much if you put in Google Red All Over Film, you'll pretty much find everything that's about us. If you go to the site, you can get like us on the Facebook page, and you get the updates when the film is coming to your town. So it should be hitting theaters later this fall. So if you sign up on either Twitter or Facebook, you get the updates when it's coming to you.
All right, folks out there, you hear that? Because I'm going to be the first one to sign up. So it sounds great. And I applaud you for what you're doing. I mean, you're out there. You're trying to make a difference. You're trying to make people aware. And I totally applaud you for that. So you folks out there, you're listening, whether you're listening live, podcast the show later, check this out. Okay. Give us the name of your movie again.
It's Red All Over Film.
Red All Over Film. You guys check that. Okay.
It stars Victor Love, who played Bigger Thomas with Oprah Winfrey. And Slim Thug, the rapper, Charmin Lee, who's been in numerous films. It's a variety. It's a very good cast of people. Joselito Marquez, lots of people. So if you guys come to the website, check it out. I think you'd be very surprised.
Yeah, y'all get out there and y'all support this film, okay? Support it by going out there to see it and make the lines long, okay? Okay. All right. Would you like a link of the show? So maybe you can put this show on your website and people can come by your website and hear you on the show. Okay. I'll send you a link in maybe I'll send you a link in maybe 2 or 3 hours.
Okay. I appreciate it.
No problem. Thanks for being on the show. Now, you're always welcome back.
All right. Thank you. You have a good one.
Bye-bye. All right, that was author John Wayne, not the actor. He's an author because he's a screenwriter. But, you know, I'm so used to saying author because I have so many authors on the show who are actually writing books. And I've had authors on the show who write short stories and essays and stuff like that. But this was a great interview, and I appreciate him for that. And we do have to do something about gun violence in the city of Chicago. And we will be right back, folks. Stay with me.
Welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show, broadcasting live out of Chicago, and we are helping to make the world a better place, one show at a time. Thank you for listening. Thank you for finding the show, downloading the show, and just having a great time. Here we go. You are now listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Block Talk Radio.
Yeah, once again, I want to thank John Wayne for the movie maker, the producer, not the actor, for being on the show. And one of the things I wanted to touch on again, that it says that women do outdoing the men winning medals in Rio. You know, as I've said before, I don't want to take sides. I think as long as Americans are winning, it doesn't matter whether it's a woman or a man, but a lot of people are taking issue with this. It doesn't seem that issue oriented, but people are taking issue with it. I'm thinking that it's just Americans are winning. What can I say? And now Donald Trump is questioning Hillary's health. You know, I mean, the guy's going all the way out to try to have his sagging poll numbers to trying to get his sagging poll numbers to rebound. It just doesn't seem like it's going to happen. So he's going after Hillary's health. He's going after her mental stabilization. He's going after everything. And everything he's trying to say about her, basically all Donald Trump doing is taking Hillary's words, taking what folks say about him, and trying to label Hillary Clinton with it. That is something that where people would take my words and my own actions and use them back at me, you know, and that's what Donald Trump is doing to Hillary Clinton. I've heard him speak several times trying to bash Hillary words that she used against Hillary. She's okay. She's 69. She's 1 year younger than Donald Trump. So that should say something. That should say something. So just like I was saying earlier, we have to get out here and vote, folks. You got to get out here and vote. You got to get out here and vote. And be active in it. Be active in voting. And just like we were talking about, you not only vote for if you're going to vote for a Democratic governor, you got to vote for a Democratic senator, and you got to vote down the ballot also, down the ballot as you also vote up the ballot. Because without running the House and the Senate, without control of the House and the Senate, the president or the governor will not have people that they can work with. Republicans will never work with Democrats. The Democrats have worked with Republicans, but the Republicans are just so damn stubborn that they will not work with Democrats, whether it's in Washington, D.C. or Chicago, Illinois, or some of these other state houses around town. So when you get out there and vote, start trying not to be pissed off, because I've said this before, even if you don't vote, even if you do not vote, your vote still will be used, but it'll be used in a negative way. Don't ever think I'm not voting for him. He ain't. And don't ever think that if you do not vote, that you're hurting a politician. You're hurting yourself, and you helping to elect a Republican or somebody who is not somebody who does not have your interest at hand. So we got to be smart about voting. We got to get out there and do it. There's no doubt about it. But basically, let me say this. You can vote for anybody you want. You can vote for a Republican, independent. You can vote for a Democrat, but you must vote. You must vote. You have to do this. November is coming up, and it's going to be critical. Rauner is out here saying, and one of his surrogates at the state fair, at Illinois State Fair yesterday, I believe it was yesterday or the day before, he said something. As the state fair was winding down, the state fair, I think they have this thing every year where the politicians go down state Springfield and just sort of party and give, you know, speeches and stuff. So the first day was the Republicans going to Springfield, and a parting shot came from one of Rauner's, I believe, allegedly one of his surrogates, saying that Democrats basically stink. They smell like the porta potty or something like that. So, you know, we can't have that, you know. However, the Democrats had their say in Springfield, I believe today, and they just talked about, you know, getting rid of Rauner. They wanted him out. The state of Illinois want his ass out, you know, but he's going to be fighting for Republicans. he's going to throw as much money as he can to Republicans. I think this was stated when they had their state fair party. He's going to throw so much money at it. And as I mentioned earlier, Rauner has vetoed automatic voter registration. To me, that's just what Republicans do. To me, that's a form of suppressing the vote, making it harder. He's making it harder for people to vote. That's what Republicans do around the country. They make it harder for you to vote, even though they try to make it sound like it's a positive thing, that they're doing something for you, they're helping you out. This, anytime you veto voter registration, that's suppression, because he knows that he's not liked or loved in this state, and he knows people want his ass out. So he's going to figure out some way to make it harder for them to vote, or make it so that they can't vote at all, make it so we cannot vote at all. And the people of Illinois has to know this. They have to know this, and this is true. He's suppressing the vote, but he's doing it in a positive way and saying it the way he wants to say it to make you think that he's doing something for you. He's not.
Well, we're going to doing this because there's been fraud and people have been voting. Dead people have been voting. They give up all kinds of excuses to try to suppress the vote. Now they're doing it in this state of Illinois. But we're not going to tolerate that. You know, do what you have to do to vote. If you have to get an ID, get an ID. You know, but in some instances, you didn't need an ID at first. You could just walk in and vote. But they want you to have an ID. If you have to have an ID, have an ID. I think I've been voting for many, many, many years, and every time that I voted, I carried an ID. I make sure I didn't have a problem. I think that was once or twice I voted without an ID. I voted without showing an ID, although I did have ID on me, but no one there asked me for one, so I just voted. You know, but Rauner doesn't want that. Republicans doesn't want that. They want to take you through hoops. They want to make it more difficult. They want to hinder you in trying to vote, because they know that it's more Democratic and independent voters out here than there are Republican voters. You've got a lot of Republican voters right now who said the hell with the Republicans. They're voting for Hillary Clinton. They're going to vote for a senator, a Democratic representative. So Hillary should be in good shape once she takes office in November. Even though Donald Trump is trying to come back, he done shook up his campaign. He done fired people. He done hired people. But it just seems like more of Donald Trump's. The new people that he's hired look worse than the ones that he fired, in my opinion. But we have to do something. We have to vote. Bruce Rauner. Let's see if we can do this. Bruce Rauner. Okay, days after Bruce Rauner vetoed a bill that would have automatically registered new voters as they seek state services listing voter fraud. I just got through saying that. It's all about voter fraud, and there's never been any voter fraud to any scale in Illinois. But this is what Republicans do. They make up stuff. They make up stuff to do things against the people. Rauner knows he wasn't voted. Rauner knows that he wasn't voted in the office. He knows two of the reasons why he got in is because he bought the election. He paid for it. Most people in the state of Illinois did not get out and vote. I voted. But however, I did not vote for Bruce Rauner because I knew better. But a lot of people don't. A lot of people don't follow what's going on. And they don't vote. They don't care. They don't trust politicians. I understand that. But you have to do something. You just cannot sit at home and not do anything, because these people are going to wreak havoc on you. You're talking about state services. You know, Rauner is all about cutting. He's a mean son of a gun. He's an honorary guy. He's honorary. He's vile. He's mean. He's disrespectful. And he's trying to win. He's trying to... He's going to buy the election again in November because he wants to fill the state houses in the legislature of Illinois. He wants to fill that with his cronies
with in the Senate. He wants to fill it with Republicans in the representative in Illinois. Okay, that's what he wants to do. That's his goal. His goal is to turn this blue state red. That's his goal. I mean, when he was at this state fair the other day, I mean, he was yelling, screaming, and yelling. I don't know what he's doing. When two of his greatest allies quit on him, they quit on him. And a lot of people are leaving the legislature. Why? Because they're not getting paid. We don't have a budget, folks. We still do not have a full budget. And it's going on. It's 2 years and we haven't had a budget. There's a stopgap budget, but that's crap. Okay. And Rauner thinks he's going to win re-election in this manner. He's crazy. The guy is delusional. He hasn't done anything for this state but wreck it. And he's trying to wreck it even more. So I would say to people, get enthusiastic. Become enthusiastic, get excited, throw this guy out in 2 years. 2 years seem like a long time. He can wreck a lot of things, but he has to go. A lot of people have already lost their jobs. People are filling up the shelters because of this guy. He refuses to even look at raising the minimum wage. He's a businessman. He wants to lower it. And in some cases, Rauner wants to eliminate the minimum wage, if I can say this. So people have to get out here and vote. You have to do your thing in November. You know, and I honestly think we're going to take this thing from Rauner. He is no politician. And I'm hoping people do not listen to his rhetoric. It's a bunch of lies. He's twisting it. He's turning it. He's spinning it to make it sound like he's doing something for you. He's not. He sounds great when he talks. He sounds like, wow, that sounds great. No, yeah, but listen to what he's saying. If you listen to what he's saying, you're going to say, no, we can't have that. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. We will be right back, folks. Let's see what we got here. We will be right back.
You are now listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show, the talk of our times. This is the talk of our times on Block Talk Radio, the Wilder Network.
All right, as we know, in Louisiana, it is a mess. It's a mess in that state. It's in parts of that state. It's just totally a mess. And they want Obama to visit, but Obama is too busy playing golf at Martha's Vineyard, home of the rich. But they are asking Obama to come. They want him to come. And some politicians are making excuses for him that he can't always come out. We've been wanting Obama to come to the state of Illinois to try to talk to some of these guys out here in some of these crime-ridden neighborhood to put down the guns. We have been begging. Jesse Jackson has been begging Obama to come to Illinois, especially Chicago, since they say that Chicago is their home.
And he won't come. Obama's not going to budge. I mean, when it comes to social issues, he'll talk from afar. He'll talk from the Oval Office or the White House or somewhere in Washington about the situation here in Louisiana, about the situation in Chicago, you know. So he won't come. He won't get up. He will not come. You know, you got to go to Obama, you know, and I actually think Obama is not that social. You know, I don't think he's that social. Obama's been getting a lot of criticism. Poor people put Obama in office. People getting up out of their wheelchairs to go to vote for Obama. People have gotten up out of their hospital bed to go vote for Obama. But Obama will not come to Chicago and talk to these thugs about putting down the guns, lowering violence. He will not come and do that. If he comes to Chicago, he's coming to fundraise, and then he's going to be zipped right out of here again back to Washington. He will not say anything on that. He's not going to go to Louisiana and talk to these people who have lost everything in these devastating floods. He'll pour money at it, but he will not come. And that's one of my, you know, my difficulties that I have with Obama. He will not get out of his comfort zone to come down and be with ordinary people, be around ordinary people to help try to quell some of these things that are going on in America. These Republican governors aren't going to do that. We need Obama because he's African-American. I voted for him twice. Second time I held my nose and voted for him because his first term was disappointing to me. I mean, a lot of people, well, he brought the economy back to life. He may have, but after that, it's been nothing, totally nothing. People like him. People love him. His poll numbers are over 50%. I don't know why. Maybe it's his smile. Maybe it's the way he talks, or maybe people think he's really, really smart and intelligent, but that has nothing to do with him being around and socializing with grassroots people. I know he goes to shelters and help to feed the hungry, but he needs to get out of his comfort zone and come to the city of Chicago, go to Louisiana, where those people are begging for him to come. They would love to see him there, but he's not gonna go there because he'd rather be among the rich people playing golf at Martha's Vineyard. He was criticized for that a while ago. I'm pretty sure he's being criticized again, but Obama do not give a damn. He does not give a damn. Okay. And I know people who are listening to this show is going to, you know, say, hey, wow, why are you not? You know, Obama does not give a damn about grassroots everyday people. He is Wall Street. He's corporations. You know, he is a corporate president. He's a gay president. Not saying that he's gay per se, but he's a gay president. He likes refugees. He will not come. I don't know. I actually think he's afraid that he may be assassinated or something or other, or people are not going to, you know, I mean, with his popularity, people would love to see him. People would love to see him. I mean, if he's afraid of being assassinated, he can always have as many secret services agents around him as possible if he's afraid of somebody's going to do some harm. But, you know, we would like to see him. And I would like to see him in the city of Chicago, not just for fundraising and then zipping back out on a plane, stopping traffic all over the place to fundraise for somebody. You know, I'd rather see him go out to some of these Chicago neighborhoods, especially some of these low crime areas, and talk to some of these thugs, these gangbangers, and even some of these parents about being better parents to their children so they don't grow up to be a gangbanger and go out and shoot somebody or put themselves in a situation where they're being shot in the back by a police officer. I would love to see Obama come out here and just talk to some of these people. And I've always been in awe to why he never, ever came to Chicago to talk to some of these criminals who are out here on the streets. I just don't understand it, especially when he and his wife and his children call Chicago home. This is your home. You don't want to come back here and the crime is 80, 90%. You know, that's embarrassing. I actually don't think they're going to come back to Chicago. I think they're going to go live in Hawaii or something. You know, the paradise, as they call it. But he hasn't stated really that he was going after his presidency is over, which is January. And I actually think he can't wait until it's over. And I do think that Obama is thinking more about his legacy once he gets out of office than more than anything. He wants people to, I've stated this before, he wants people to remember him and remember the things he's done once he's out of office. The only thing that I can think that he's done, you know, is probably crying at funerals when a terrorist attacked a country around the world or the United States. You know, a lot of, and, you know, I mean, if I had to compare Obama and Donald Trump, Obama comes out winning on that. But still in all, just because I do that doesn't make, in my view, doesn't make him a great president. Some people think he's a great president. I don't see it. I truly don't see it. He could be a great president. There's that effort there. There's their possibility, but no way, in my view. 347-857-1762. You know, he, like I said before, he's thinking about his legacy. His legacy is what his legacy is going to be once he's out of office and he's no longer president. He wants us to think about him once he's not in office. I mean, once Obama is not in office, I'm not going to think about him. I mean, not personally, I'm going to try to forget him. Because in my case, being an African-American, he's a disappointment. 8 years. What has he actually done besides bring the economy back from collapse? And that this was way back in 2009, 2010. What has he done so far? I mean, there are some things that he's done with his executive powers, but legislatively, what has he done? Nothing. Absolutely nothing. Look pretty. Talk wonderful. Great speech. He can do a great speech, but that's about it. He can talk all over the place, say the right things that we want to hear, you know, but that's it. And then he's gone. Then he's off to Martha's Vineyard, if I can say it. Playing golf with the rich people. Forget about those who were getting food stamps, who put him in office. He don't want to be around those kind of people. And he doesn't. He really doesn't. And that disappoints me. It really does. It really does. And what do you think? What do you think about Obama? What do you think? Okay. Are we having a problem? Let's see if it, we may be having a problem, folks. Oh, okay. All righty.
Your president.
Okay.
Sent a letter out to every school district in America 2 weeks ago. Obama. Don't get quiet, because 8 years ago, y'all was dancing in the streets. Let's be honest. You was twerking, backsliding, somersaulting. We got Obama. We got Obama. Negroes ran around and said, we have arrived. The president is black. Now look at you 8 years later. Has done absolutely nothing for you or your children. I know he's president of all the people. I understand. But all the people are not gay, but he damn sure looked out for them. I understand he's president of all the people, but everyone in America is not a Latino, but he looked out for them. He's president of all the people, but everyone in America is not a woman, but he damn sure gave white women the Equal Pay Act. So why is it that he got to be president for everybody when it comes to us? But it's okay for him to just be concerned with gay folks sometimes. It's okay for him to just be concerned with Latinos sometimes. It's okay for him to just be concerned with illegal immigrants sometimes. He can pay particular attention to every other non-white community in America, but when it comes to you, you're not allowed to expect anything from him. So Obama sent this letter telling the school districts of America that if you don't want to lose your special ed money, and if you don't want to lose your JROTC money, and if you don't want to lose your No Child Left Behind money, and if you don't want to lose your Title I money, you must allow transgender children. This is 2 weeks ago. This is new news. You must let transgender students use the bathroom of the gender with which they identify. This is what's going on now. So by the new year in New York City, you're going to have a situation where a boy can go into your daughter's bathroom because he's in the process of changing his gender. You're going to have a situation where girls can go into the boys' bathroom because she's in the process of changing her gender. Now, here's my issue with this. I'm an educator. I'm a school principal. The schools are out of control enough as it is. There's no law and order in the high schools anyway. So how do you add further confusion by now removing the sign off the door that says girl and the sign off the door that says boy and replace it with a sign that looks half boy and half girl, which basically says do as you please? Well, guess what, black folks? This is your fault more than Obama's, because it was we who championed him and his election and stayed loyal even when he did nothing after the Trayvon Martin verdict. Stayed loyal when he refused to do anything about the systematic police extermination of black folks. You stayed loyal. Somebody said, we must protect him because he looks like us. Bill Cosby looked like your ass too. But you ain't rushing to help Bill. You let the bourgeoisie manipulate you and your loyalty into defending Negroes who are pro-status quo. Obama don't care about nobody in this room, but because you suffer from a paralysis of analysis and because you did not ask critical questions of him 8 years ago, our children will suffer from the aftermath 30, 40 years from now. Let me tell you why Obama was put in office. I want you to be clear. Every president is given a domestic agenda and a foreign agenda. Every president. Regardless of who goes in the White House next year, whether it's Hillary or Trump or whomever, they're going to be given a foreign mandate, a domestic mandate. Obama's foreign mandate was to open up Africa's resources to exploitation again. He did that with AFRICOM. America has recolonized Africa on a level we've never seen before under Obamaism. And our African brothers and sisters are just as brainwashed as you are. I was in Africa on the eve of Obama's first and second election, and I couldn't tell them brothers and sisters nothing. Just like you, they had an Obama psychosis. God sent them, Jesus sent them, Muhammad sent them. So when Obama came to their table, they opened up the resources because his daddy allegedly was an African. That was the foreign mandate. Take back Africa. Guess what the domestic one was? Check this out. 8 years ago, the United States government, Hillary Clinton, because she's a population control junkie, we're going to get to that in a minute, because a lot of y'all pro-Hillary. First of all, I disagree with anybody who creates a dichotomy of any white person or people whatsoever. To paint Trump as the devil means Hillary is an angel. You should not be doing that. You're confusing your children. Hillary is no better than Trump. They are the same when it comes to African people. There's no difference there. The difference is only in your mind. See, white supremacy operates through the names, the titles. They said power is the ability to do what? What is power? The ability to define reality and make the victims accept your definition. Like you, you believe you exist in freedom. What the hell is free about you? You're not free. Freedom is the ability to do exactly what white folks do, when they do it, and how they do it, economically and politically. Are you free to buy a home anywhere? Are you free to work wherever you want? Is your child free to go to school wherever you choose? You were never free. You were emancipated. Abraham Lincoln gave you an emancipation. But the 13 colonies declared independence. Why were the colonies independent, but Africans were emancipated? The word emancipation is a business concept that speaks to transfer of ownership. The 13th Amendment was a transfer, a business transaction between the owner and the government. The emancipation means that you no longer own them privately, but the whole country owns these Negroes publicly. Eight years ago, the white man said, we got to find a way to push homosexuality, and we need to find a way to push the whole LGBT program in the black community to reduce their numbers and brainwash their children. But we have to do it in a way that they would accept. See, they have think tanks. The white man got think tanks. Think when they sit around and strategize, how do we push this on black folks? Because they said black people are largely not a homosexual people. Yeah, they've always had their gays in their family, but they know to stay in their damn place and keep that stuff out the view of the family. Am I wrong? Okay. We've had aunts and uncles and brothers and sisters, but they know you don't come out with that. We understand. But that shit don't see the light of day in this house. Right? That was the code. We used to have a code. So they said, how are we going to get black people to accept wholesale, out in the open, unrestricted homosexuality, unrestricted lesbianism, unrestricted bisexuality and transgenderism, when this is not who they are? How are we going to do this? These people are not for that. The black church is not for it. They said, here's what we're going to do. George Bush's second term, we're going to ignore the Constitution that says separation of church and state, and we're going to allow the black church to start receiving federal grant dollars. And once the black church starts receiving shut up money from the government, they will shut up. That's preparation. Then we want to put Obama in office because Negroes have a self-esteem deficit. so that whenever they see somebody who looks like them, they stop analyzing their agenda and they stay focused on their skin tone. So while black folks are celebrating Obama, paying no attention to his policy, we're going to push the LGBT culture on the black community under the disguise of a black president who's really carrying out a gay agenda. And so the past 8 years, most of you have changed your position on LGBTism purely off of the basis of Obama's influence. Now, let me tell you what's interesting about Obama. His first term of office, he said very clearly at the podium, I believe marriage is between a man and a woman. If you don't believe me, it's on YouTube. Marriage is between a man and a woman. I will not consent to marriage being between anything other. This is Obama running for president, first term. Second term, he becomes the first president in American history to approve same-sex marriage. One was a setup, the other was a takeover. Obama was not put in office to be a reparation to you. He was not put in office because America is post-racial. Obama was put in office to do one thing and one thing only. Get you to accept the LGBT takeover of the black civil rights movement. Are you aware that homosexuals have gotten more rights in 4 years than you've gotten in 400 years? Are you aware?
All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio.
You are now listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Block Talk Radio. The George Wilder Jr. Show is now on the air. It is all about making the world a better place. Join me. You are now listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Block Talk Radio.
Yeah, welcome back to the show. A few promptus there, impromptu. The Bears are now playing the Chicago Bears of the football team. Chicago Bears are playing New England in the preseason exhibition game. This is their second preseason exhibition game. The one last week, they lost miserably.
And from my understanding, a minute ago, they were driving down the field. Suddenly, you thought they were going to score. They wind up with getting 3 points. So it's a little shaky still. And they're on now. They're playing the game. If you're listening to this later on in the podcast, you know, you'll know that this is August the 18th. All right. So the Bears may wind up being a disappointing again. I don't think the Bears, this is my opinion, I don't think the Chicago Bears, the football team, is going to go anywhere this season, this 2016. I really don't. If they do, they will surprise me. You know, and that's what I would like for them to do. Surprise me. Prove me to be wrong that the Chicago Bears are going to go to the Super Bowl. That's a high order, but it can happen if they prove me wrong. But right now, it doesn't. And I hate it when some of these teams, especially the Chicago Bears, when they lose in these preseason exhibition games, the players and the coaches say that it's a meaningless game. It doesn't mean anything. You know, it doesn't count. I beg to differ. The preseason game to me means this is how they will be going into the regular season of playing 16 games. So that's, I think they are important. And they are important because when these games, when these teams get out there to play these exhibition preseason games, they are playing to win. They are not playing to lose. Exhibition games or no exhibition game, preseason games, whether they count or if they do not count, these guys are playing to win because they have something to prove. They have something to show the coaching staff, the managing staff, and the ownership of this team. So they have something to prove. These games mean a hell of a lot. And if you hear someone say that an exhibition game, a preseason exhibition game, don't mean anything because they lost, they're just trying to save face. That's all. They're trying to cover their asses. These games mean a lot. And don't get me wrong, this is not a sports show. This is not, but this is Chicago, and the Bears are playing as I speak. And I'm a Bears fan. I just hate it. I don't like it when they lose all the time and lose because they're making a lot of mistakes. But hopefully, I am cheering for them. I want them to win. But if they don't, you know, it's the same old Bears. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. It has been so much fun. I've had a great time. It's just wonderful. I love doing the show, and I feel good. I feel as though this show has been a good show. And I want to thank my author, my guest author, John Wayne. He's a screenwriter and a movie producer. His movie will be out this fall. You guys check that out. If you didn't get the information, rewind this show once it's done and get all that information and go to the movies to see this thing. And I'm hoping that it's in all the theaters, not just selective theaters. Okay. All right. I've had a movie producer on the show. I've had lots of people on the show, doctors, lawyers, you know, people who are out there trying to make a difference and also making the world a better place. That's all this show is about. I can't reiterate that more or repeat it more or say it more, because that's what this is all about, is making the world a better place. It's tough. It's going to be hard. It's going to be mind-boggling. But we're going to do it until we can't do it no more, or try to do it until we can't do it no more. All right. You've been listening to George Wilder Jr. Show. Follow me on Facebook. Follow me on Blog Talk Radio right here. LinkedIn. I'm all over Amazon.com. I have a lot of writing up there. I'm doing some more writing. Matter of fact, we're going to be taking a few days off, 3 days off. And I'm going to be back until Monday, starting at 6 months. The show is always running through Monday through Thursday. Sometime in the future, we're going to include Friday also. But now it's just Monday through Thursday, 6 o'clock p.m. Chicago time, Central Standard Time, and to 7:30, sometimes to 8 o'clock. We're going to expand that to another 30 minutes because the show is so wonderful. I'm having great guests on the show, and I feel good about doing it. I love doing it, and I will always do it as long as I can.
All right. You've been listening to the show, and I hope you enjoyed that little bit of Obama criticism. And I think it's legitimate criticism. Like I said before, the folks in Louisiana, they are, I mean, some parts of the state has been devastated with floods. People, 30,000 people have been rescued. I mean, people are being rescued as I speak right now from those devastating floods. And my understanding is that it's going to get worse. There's more rain in the forecast there. And all of these people are asking is that Obama, he should come. He should have visited there just to see the devastation for himself and to hear the voices of those who have voted for him. You know, put his ass in office for a second time. Those who have voted for him and put him in office for a second time. But he will not do it. Just like he will not come to Chicago and try to help bring down the crime. Obama is not trying to make the world a better place. He's just trying to make his life and what he wants to do a better place. I've criticized him many times on this show, and I've had people call in disagreeing with me on that. But that's, I mean, that's your prerogative. That's what you want to do. But from my standpoint and from some other prominent African-American leaders, we are very critical of him. I mean, you take Cornel West, for instance. Cornel West can blast him, you know. Obama has not been the president that most African-Americans wanted him to be. Now, he's great for Hispanics. He's great for gay people. He does a lot of things for white people. One of the things I think Obama likes to do more than anything in his presidency is to give parties. He likes to give White House parties. I mean, this tell jokes and all this kind of thing. And he likes to give out medals. Okay. I think these are the two greatest things of his presidency that he loves doing, giving out medals and giving White House parties, comedy festivals and all this kind of thing at the White House. But dealing with people one-on-one, dealing with this flood fiasco in Louisiana. Now, he's stating that he's getting regular updates on what's going on in Louisiana. That's not good enough. Get your ass out there and go out there and witness the devastation firsthand and talk to some of those folks out there who have lost everything. They want to see you. They want to talk to you. You're the president, but he won't go. He'd rather play golf at Martha's Vineyard and be among the rich. And this is true. This is true. He'd rather, just like he will not come to Chicago, a place he claims to be his home. He won't come to Chicago with its crime, high crime, to try to get the thugs and the gangbangers to stop shooting each other and stop killing people, period. Young children. He will not come. He may not even mention it. This doesn't, the devastation and the murder, the killing, the homicides that go on in Chicago, I don't think Obama really cares. I truly don't. I don't think he cares. It's happening. It's nothing I can do. You got a governor, you got a mayor. What do you need me for? I don't really think he cares. You know, I don't think he really feels anything when a 6-year-old or a 10-year-old is shot in the back by a stray bullet coming from a gangbanger's gun. I really don't think he feels anything, you know, because he doesn't really say anything. I mean, these things happen. He runs off and go play with the rich people. You know, I think he's been a disappointment. I know a lot of you guys out there are going to disagree with me. That's okay. We can agree to be disagreeable. But, you know, this is real. This is totally real. And we made our beds. We might as well sleep in it, you know.
Open our eyes. thy loving peace. And let all dissension cease. Faith each day increase. And
host of guests to appear on the George.